All right, it wasn't 85 on Saturday, but G-Day took place anyway. We bring in Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. Howdy, Mike. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Now, I'm trying to remember when you came on to Dog Nation. Were you here for G-Day last year?
No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't here. No.
Okay, couldn't remember. So this was your first G-Day, right?
It wasn't my first G-Day. I was impressed. You know, I kind of thought with that weather, you know, man, 20,000, had over 50,000 people there. And it was about as bad a weather as you could possibly imagine. I can't imagine it's ever been worse than that, has it?
No. I mean, well, I guess it could have just poured the whole time, it could have been, you know, like, I guess it could have been worse, but it wasn't a great day, and to still get as many people there as there were. I think I saw where only Bama had more, at least as far as announced attendance went. They had 62,000, and then Georgia was second in the SEC with 52, which I know says a lot about, and you can touch on this, the hunger of Dog Nation and wanting to finally get this team over the top as far as a national championship.
Well, and I just think the support, I mean, yeah, they're hungry, but I think they, you know, that they're close with the team. I mean, there's you know, this team connects. You know, I've covered great teams that don't necessarily connect in the community, but I think, you know, and then also it's the buzz that's in Athens, that's around Georgia, that's around the school. I mean, everything's going for it. I mean, you look at this campus and you don't see cranes. You know, you guys, you've been around, David. You go around to these schools for baseball trips, and you could probably attest better than I. You go to some of these schools, and they're all torn up and look like a construction zone, and there's cranes everywhere, and they still don't have a prayer of, you know, looking like Georgia, because where maybe their landmass they've got to work with, or, you know, their buildings aren't congruent, you know. You know, Georgia is put together, man. I mean, it is a nice school. It is a beautiful campus. And, you know, like I said, you don't have these construction zones everywhere like you do other places. And so you got a great campus. You got, as I said, this town, which, you know, you want them to have every football game they can just because of all the great places to eat. And it's just, it's the whole setting. It's everything. It's Kirby being a former Georgia player, inspiring hope. It's the players. You know, that it continue to emerge. It's the whole thing. And so that's why you can get over 50,000 when it's cold and windy and rainy. And, you know, some campuses, the only reason you ever want to go there is for football. You wouldn't go there to, you know, walk around or, you know, look at, you know, buildings or reminisce about your experience. And, again, you know those schools that I'm talking about.
I always joke, like, if you look up college campus in the dictionary, you'll get a photo of a construction site, because it does seem like that's how it's all. And Georgia's been in that boat too. Now, right now, I mean, Georgia's not. I mean, a beautiful campus. A lot of the work that they've done to, I guess, with what do you call it, Logan? The business, the Terry College where
business,
they've moved
yeah.
over, and that area there is awesome now. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And Georgia's just in a great place at the moment. And you know, even in a G-Day where, Mike, I mean, you would say there wasn't that, like, one overwhelming storyline. There wasn't that, you know, that one thing everybody wanted to see. But still, people showed up despite the weather.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not like there's a quarterback battle going on. I mean, maybe I wouldn't even call the race for second team quarterback a battle. It's, you know, two completely different guys. But, yeah, I mean, it's coming off of a, let's face it, I mean, it was a lackluster Sugar Bowl. There's no other way around it. That was Georgia's worst game of the year. I would say even worse than LSU, because LSU was not a case of the Georgia players not being dialed in. It was a case of, you know, some plays that LSU made. That was more about LSU bouncing back on their home turf after losing to Florida. And that 100,000 crowd at LSU, that was about LSU. That wasn't about Georgia. The Sugar Bowl, I mean, Texas is a team they should beat by two or three touchdowns if they give you this, you know, it's the same Georgia that we saw in November. You know, Texas isn't in that game in the fourth quarter. But, you know, we all know what happened. You know, the best player decided not to play. DeAndre Walker was injured. And, you know, the guys were basically heartbroken and upset, and I think rightfully so, that they didn't make the college football playoff. And, you know, it is what it is. In Texas, it was going for 10 wins. And give Texas credit. They showed up. But if Georgia shows up, they win that game by two or three touchdowns. So, coming off of a lackluster Sugar Bowl, not really, as you said, having a major overriding storyline, and then the weather, to me, was a recipe for a clunker. And I think that's why Kirby, and I've said on this show before, I think Kirby is one of the most calculated, thorough coaches I've ever been around. They're all calculated and thorough, but I think he's maniacal. That's why he didn't ask for a big crowd, because I think he didn't think he was going to get one. And I think he was blown away, and he said so in the press conference, that crowd showed up. I think Kirby's smart. I think his heart was swelling with pride and happiness to see how many people were there on a day like that, especially for the dog walk. He was, you know, for him to go out of his way and mention that tells you, because he had a lot of recruits there. He had to be holding his breath, because if there's a lot of no-shows and there's no dog walk crowd, those recruits don't get a good vibe. I mean, that was really important. So to me, and I put that in my three, you know, things, takeaways, the crowd support to me was very telling. I don't normally put the crowd into the storyline, but I thought a crowd was part of the storyline at G-Day this year.
I know there wasn't, like, you mentioned the crowd, you mentioned the recruits, some storylines like that, but on the field was one of those years where there wasn't a whole lot for Georgia fans to kind of be excited about. There were no controversies. But you wrote about this yesterday on your website and DogNation.com. We talked about him a little bit last hour. Brian Herrien really seems to be emerging as a legitimate top of the depth chart running back at what we call running back U. What were some things that you were impressed by him on G-Day?
The open field with J.R. Reed. Because I hold J.R. Reed in the highest regard. J.R. Reed, I think, could be drafted in the third round of the NFL draft this year had he gone pro. And I think he's a pro. I think he's probably one of the best open field tacklers in the SEC. And to see Brian knock him down with a stiff arm in the way to the end zone. And the way, you know, the thing I liked about Brian the most, and this is a pet peeve, and listen, I played running back a long time ago, but when it's third and one, you know, man, you got to have a mentality that you're running through that wall. You got to be ready to drop your shoulder and take on Thor. And nowadays, these running backs, and, you know, Le'Veon kind of started it, but, you know, they dance around in the hole a little bit. Not everybody's Le'Veon Bell, okay? You can't do that and run out of a tackle. Most guys can't. But I love the way Herrien hits that line, you know, just like a sledgehammer in those short yardage situations. And last year when I did that study, he was the most effective running back in short yardage last. Not Holyfield, not Swift. Brian Herrien was the most effective short yardage runner for Georgia last year. And now he's in a feature position, I think, and he still hit the hole hard yesterday on a couple third and one runs. You know, that's something Georgia was really focused on. For whatever reason, they weren't good at that last year. You remember that Florida game, that embarrassing Florida series where the Gators had that goal line stand after Tate Crowder's fumble recovery. That can't happen this year. And so to see Herrien pick up those third and ones was big. To see him in the open field, knock down an NFL safety with a stiff arm, just the whole Brian Herrien story, a guy that's been buried on the depth chart behind incredibly gifted runners, stuck it out, stuck it out, don't want to say waited his turn, because I'm sure he wasn't happy not to get the ball. He was contributing on special teams, but, you know, finally getting his chance to shine. And listen, I think DeAndre Swift is arguably the best running back in the country. But on Saturday, in those wet, slippery conditions, I thought Brian Herrien was the best running back in the stadium on Saturday.
Talking with Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. Your three takeaways that you mentioned just a moment ago. Talk a little bit about, you said secondary on point. So let's talk about the Georgia secondary.
Yeah, you know, we've watched those highlight videos, and we all love to see the receiver. You know, J.G. Holloman is just, he's such a highlight waiting to happen. He's got that 42-inch vertical and those strong hands, and just such a – I really think J.J. was the best receiver on the team by the end of last year. He looks unbelievable to me. I mean, I think he is going to be a first-team All-SEC guy. So they showed a couple highlights of him going over Stokes for touchdowns this spring. And, you know, they throw, what, 50 balls a day, right? So they're going to show you the best play. So, you know, I'm getting this log on. Oh, look at this. Boy, these receivers, they're really – you know, and Kirby said at his press conference the other day that the secondary had a good spring, and I'm thinking, well, you know, in the highlights I've seen, it's always the receivers, right? It's like ESPN, right? They're always show you the 10 shots LeBron made, and they don't show you the 25 that he missed, right? So in the scrimmage, you know, early on, you see Stokes take that ball away, and I know J.J. slipped, but it was still an incredible play by Eric Stokes. And I, you know, what, 9 pass breakups on the day, 9 or 10? And, you know, I just thought that that secondary was a big reason why Jake Fromm had a horrible day. I thought that secondary absolutely wore out the receiving corps for the most part. And when there were opportunities to make plays, you know, Matt Landers had about 3 balls go through his hands. So I thought, and that was against the second team secondary. So I thought the first team secondary, LeCount looked like he was enjoying his ball. He'd go in there and throw a shoulder or helmet in the pile and come out pumping his fist. You could tell that, you know, Richard LeCount was excited about those extra 12 pounds he's put on. And, you know, he's going to be ready to be, you know, be more effective in run support. And, you know, JR is just kind of a pro. And Stokes and Tyson Campbell, I thought, played really well, you know. So, you know, that's good news. And then you had other guys emerging. You know, I thought Tyreek Stevenson, the incoming freshman, had a good day. DJ Daniel had that breakup on the last pass of the game. You know, Lewis Cine, a guy that kind of emerged, 8 tackles from another true freshman. So I think the secondary had a great day and really is on point. I think that's a credit to Charleston Warren and Kirby Smart, obviously.
Mike, one reason we love you around here, you don't hesitate to say what's on your mind. Last week, you sort of got into it with some Florida fans on a certain TV show. How different do you kind of get the sense that Florida handled themselves this spring, kind of making outlandish comments and having fun with the attendance record, making up some stuff, trolling Georgia, a team that's beaten them twice in the last 2 years, as opposed to here in Athens where it really did feel like it was just all business, get better every single day. What do you think the big contrast is right now in the Georgia and Florida programs? You kind of alluded to that late last week.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, at Georgia, I mean, Kirby promoted from within. I mean, at Georgia, you want it to be business as usual. I mean, you're, you know, I wouldn't even say you're one quarter away from the national championship the last 2 years. You're maybe 2 series away from being the national championship team. You're that close. I mean, you're that close. So why in the world would you want to change anything when Kirby's got a system in place that will lead you to the national championship? You're literally 1 or 2 plays away, you know. And I don't know if Georgia would have beat Clemson. You know, that's hard to say. Clemson was pretty outstanding in the national championship game against Alabama, but Alabama wasn't Alabama. You know, Georgia took a lot of wind out of those sails, and you know, in that SEC title game, but. So why would Georgia want to change anything? I mean, Kirby has got a certain climate that he wants to create. He has a certain mindset that he wants his players to have. He has a certain, you know, he's got a feel. Georgia's, as you said, Georgia's got a feel around it. And I'm walking in on that. So forgive me for not being here during, you know, the Mark Richt controversy or the first Kirby year, but what I've seen from Georgia is championship-level football. I feel like I'm covering a national championship program. It's just, it's not if, it's when, right? But conversely, at Georgia, look at the clown show that they've been through. I mean, they, you know, guys with, you know, guns and coaches in and out and losses at Missouri, embarrassing. I mean, Dan Mullen has to do a makeover. He has to, and he's got to change the mindset there. He's got to create a mindset. He's got to create some confidence. He's got to make those players and those fans believe again. And so he's got to do things to get attention. You know, if he didn't, he wouldn't be doing his job. So I'm not saying Georgia fans have to like it, right? When you know, but that's the little guy jumping up and down saying, look at me, and trying to change the culture and get Florida back, you know, where they have that confidence and they have that swagger and they have that reason to believe. The last thing Dan Mullen needs is for his players to be beat by Georgia before they even take the field. But these last 2 victories for Georgia, to me, have been so convincing. And players on the team know. You know, people like this year, when Georgia played Alabama this year, I'll be honest, I thought this Alabama team might beat this Georgia team by 2 touchdowns. I really did. In fact, I think Alabama was favored by 2 touchdowns this year. But you know who didn't believe that? The Georgia players. Because they'd looked across, those guys have played Alabama the year before. They knew they had Alabama beat in that national championship game. If that safety doesn't bite on the fake on Tua's eyes, they knew that. They knew they beat them. They knew they went toe-to-toe, and they were every bit as good as Alabama physically. So when they played them this year, everybody else could say everything they wanted. But those players know. Players know what happened the year before, right? So now Florida and Georgia, right? Those Florida guys know. They know they know Georgia stomped their ass, right? So Dan Mullen's got to do something. He's got to do something to change that. So
yeah.
He's got everybody. He's trying to whip everybody into a frenzy. So that's what's going on.
Yeah, you're right. And I know the Georgia fans are just waiting, though, that if the Dogs beat them by two or three touchdowns in the next game, they'll love the fact that, like you said, he's been jumping up and down and trying to make all this noise, and to have it kind of blow up in his face will be.
Well, you know,
win.
David. Let me say this though. Let me say this about Georgia fans. What I've noticed, and I'm on social media a lot because it's part of my job. It's part of my job to be on there, to be on social media. So that's why I'm on there a lot. But Georgia fans don't have the cockiness that a lot of other fan bases do. They really don't. It's a very business-like crowd. It's a very, very as professional as it gets on Twitter. You might have a couple of Yahoos. Every fan base does.
Every fan base has a Logan. Come on, man.
Not Georgia's. Well, no, we're not Yahoos.
No,
I'm kidding.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When I was in my 20s following the Denver Broncos, I shudder to think what I would have put on Twitter after some of those early Denver Broncos losses. You know, so I can't say much. I would have been a Twitter terror when I was in fan mode there in my late teens and early 20s, but now I know the Georgia fans. To me, it's all about winning a championship. And there's always going to be some that take pleasure in. And you and I talked about this last week. I get it. There's always going to be some Georgia fans that can't beat Georgia Tech enough times bad enough. I get it. There's always going to be some Georgia fans that had that bad experience with a Florida fan. But for the most part, the Georgia fans kind of emulate their head coach and just kind of dialed in business like on Twitter, and they don't seem to have a lot of time for the noise.
Mike, always great talking to you. We will have plenty to get to. By the way, I did want to mention, I know it's not the topic we always have with you, but Georgia did get a verbal commitment over the weekend, a big offensive lineman, which again just goes and getting one out of Texas, which is just – now, two of those, the last two verbals have come from Texas, and I guess Georgia kind of showing the folks from the Lone Star State that you might be able to win the Sugar Bowl. We'll still get some of your top players, but,
don't forget Tom Crean's basketball team beat Texas, probably cost them the NCAA tournament bid, but
that's true.
Speaking of show me, you didn't bring this up, but Georgia baseball swept Missouri. Speaking of show me.
Big weekend.
And they got Georgia Tech. Yeah, they got Georgia Tech at Central. So here's my question for you, David.
Yeah.
They
got
to go to Mississippi State next weekend. You're the guy with the pulse on the team. what is your crystal? Since you're the guy that predicted that they were going to stumble in Knoxville, what does your crystal ball say for Mississippi State next weekend?
I said this earlier on the show. Logan can back this up. I said, if you told me Georgia won't get swept in Starkville this weekend, I'll take it. So that if you said Georgia can go 3-0, 2-1, or 1-2 in Starkville, I would take it right now. And that's not a knock on the Dogs. It's just how tough it is in the SEC. And Mississippi State got swept at Arkansas this past weekend. They still got a great, great team. It just happens in the conference, and you go on the road. But here's the thing: with Georgia's starting pitching, with Georgia's pitching in general in the bullpen, anything can happen. And my Tennessee thing was just like, I just had a weird feeling about that weekend, the way it was just kind of setting up, and it did kind of go the way I thought it might. But I can't wait to see their new baseball stadium. Their fan base is as good as any in the conference. I mean,
yeah,
it's going to be an
big
awesome
time there. That's arguably their number one sport at Mississippi State,
yeah,
is baseball. I mean, that's their. And speaking, and one more plug before I get off the air here, really impressed and surprised that the Georgia softball team took 2 out of 3 from a number 8 ranked Tennessee team. I mean,
yeah,
I thought this Georgia softball team, this is twice now that I've about counted them out. And, when they got swept by LSU, I thought, okay, they could go down and they bounce back from that. And then they got swept at Alabama, and I said, boy, this program's really teetering. And they beat Georgia Tech, and then they take 2 out of 3 and run ruled Tennessee. And I covered, listen, the weeklies, That's you don't see Tennessee get run ruled. I mean, you just don't. And that Georgia softball team, when they put it together, I can't explain it, but Lou Harris, champion, when her teams put it together at the end of the year, they've got a real knack for really putting in with Delisa DiCarlo. They got the best hitter in the country. So for them to take two out of three from a top 10 team, after getting swept at Alabama last weekend, that really showed me a lot of resiliency in that clubhouse. So it really is a great time for Georgia fans. I mean, we're going to talk spring football probably for the next month, but in the meantime, you can't go wrong with baseball or softball right now. Those programs are really showing out.
I totally agree. And like I said, if you start thinking something about Lou, she'll prove you wrong too. So she's always done that.
Yeah,
don't be giving her any lip. So anyway, hey Mike, great talking to you. We'll catch you again next Monday.
All right, thanks guys.
All right, Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com.